The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you from a getting quite sunny Johannesburg.
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov, very nice to talk to you. We're going to have a bit of fun over the next month or so, so I look forward to that. And we have got quite a lot to talk about, so I'm going to start right by diving in with a few little snippets for the morning before we get into the main meaty bits of what we have to talk about. Miss India was crowned as Miss Universe yesterday in the Miss Universe contest in Eilat, and Miss South Africa is first runner-up in the competition. Now, we all remember the controversy surrounding the competition. First of all, the fact that it's being held in Eilat at all during this time when visitors are really not allowed to visit Israel at all, and yet contestants of the Miss Universe competition who have already been here for some weeks together with some of the entourage organizers of the competition, etc., have been allowed to come in and were allowed to come in just at that time that Israel had decided to close borders to visitors from foreign countries. So that was a little controversial. And then, of course, we remember the fact that Miss South Africa was I would say, badly treated by the South African government in the way that she was called out for agreeing to come to Israel for the competition. Good for her that she stood her ground in spite of all the pressure that she came under. And there she has her rewards because she is she came second in the competition, and I think that that's a very admirable achievement for her. So that was Miss Universe, which ended yesterday in Eilat. We also had this very, very interesting story about the interview with former President Donald Trump and what he really thinks about former Prime Minister Netanyahu. Some very, very juicy language and choice words being used in that Trump interview, where he effectively said, F Netanyahu for having the audacity to call President Joe Biden to congratulate him on winning the American presidential election. And Trump felt that this was a letdown. It was an act that really went against everything that Trump had done to try to support Bibi during the time that the two of them were in office together. He went out of his way to support him and to help him. He claims, Trump claims in that interview, that he really helped him to win or at least get a better result in some of the elections that were going on during that time. And the thanks that he got was when former Prime Minister Netanyahu called Joe Biden to congratulate him. I think there's a little bit of naivety going on. Let's remember that that phone call came more than a month after President Biden was actually elected to office. And one would imagine that no matter what you think about him, no matter what your views are, no matter who you support or you don't support, when a man is elected to be President of the United States, you probably wish to congratulate him, you know, no matter what the situation is. So, yeah, some interesting little things going on around the edges in the press the last few days.
Well, when it comes to Trump, it'll always be the blame game. Blame, 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 won't take responsibility. But that, like you said, everybody has their own opinion. Moving over to the more serious news, I believe that there has been a very, very important first in respect of a visit to the United Arab Emirates.
Yes, so that's Prime Minister Naftali Bennett, who is today in the United Arab Emirates on an official visit. He is visiting Abu Dhabi, and he has become the first Israeli Prime Minister to visit the United Arab Emirates since the Abraham Accords were struck, since diplomatic relations were established with the United Arab Emirates. Prime Minister Naftali Bennett is scheduled later today to meet with Crown Prince Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed Al Nahyan on his first trip to the United Arab Emirates. We understand that on the agenda is mostly discussions about economic cooperation. And Prime Minister Naftali Bennett is considered to be one of the most appropriate people to have this conversation, given the fact that he is a former high-tech entrepreneur himself, having had an exit in a very, very successful venture that he created and started up and ran and ultimately sold out. And so one would consider him to be one of the products of Israel startup nation, the idea of using Israeli technology, ideas, many of which are generated in the army, to make the world a better place and to expand much of that technology around the world. These days it's been called Israel scale-up nation. So instead of Israel coming up with small ideas and selling them when they're really small, only to find that they go massively big afterwards. And these days, it seems as if those Israeli companies are able to stand the distance, to stay the distance, not have to sell out at a very early stage of development, be able to scale up the company to become what they call in the business these days a unicorn. A unicorn is a company that's worth $1 billion or more. Many Israeli companies fall into that category these days. They don't get sold off until they achieve a unicorn or more kind of status. And Naftali Bennett, of course, is one of the people who's participated in all of that. So we understand that he will be meeting with the Crown Prince and with other members of the UAE government in Abu Dhabi to discuss a cooperation between Israel and the UAE on the issue of economic cooperation. But having said that, I have no doubt that he will also be talking some security issues, the relations that that Abu Dhabi has with Iran. We understand that Abu Dhabi has taken some steps in recent times to try to warm relations with Tehran, that they included, they even sent an invitation to the Iranian president, Ibrahim Raisi, to visit the United Arab Emirates and to meet with the Crown Prince of the UAE. So I have no doubt that Naftali Bennett will be talking about that particular aspect of things as well. But of course, the most pleasing thing of all was to see the warm welcome that Prime Minister Naftali Bennett had when he arrived in the United Arab Emirates. He was welcomed by the Foreign Minister, Sheikh Abdullah bin Zayed in Abu Dhabi, and he was also met by a guard of honor. So it's quite a unique thing to see the Prime Minister arriving on the LL flight with the LL plane in the background as senior members of the UAE government, all traditionally dressed, of course, welcome the Israeli Prime Minister. Who would have thought that we would live to see that day where things like this can happen?
Anything can happen. It's an amazing period of time. Things have slowed down a bit because of COVID, but I think once this COVID is behind us, we're going to see a lot more progress worldwide in respect of a lot of things that are of such great importance to the world. Talking about COVID, I believe so. That Israel's added even more countries to its red list to try stem the spread of the Omicron variant.
Yeah, I mean, I know that there are many people in South Africa who are feeling a little sore by the decision that Israel took already a couple of weeks ago to add not only South Africa, but indeed many African countries to the so-called red list of countries. What that means is a few things. First of all, that people who come from countries on the red list, if they are not Israeli, are literally just not allowed to enter Israel. In fact, that particular restriction applies across the board. At the moment, Israel is not welcoming tourists from any country, not only the red countries, but indeed any country. Anybody who's not an Israeli citizen is currently not allowed to come to Israel, unless, of course, you have a very, very good reason and you get special permission. If, for example, you are Miss India, you might have special dispensation. But other than that, the general rule is that visitors from abroad, across the board, are not allowed to come to Israel. Of course, that applies just as much to visitors from red countries. But the fact that Denmark and the UK have now been added to the list of red countries means, first of all, that Israelis are actually not allowed to visit there. There is a prohibition on Israelis going to red countries, includes those countries in Africa, but now also Denmark and the UK. It also means that Israeli nationals who return from those countries and, of course, are allowed to return to Israel in spite of the ban of people coming in from abroad, but Israeli nationals are entitled to come from those red countries. They are required to go into quarantine at a quarantine hotel for a period of at least 1 week. And I think that the time that they spend in this quarantine hotel depends largely on whether they get negative tests during the time that they're there and how they progress during that time. But the quarantine period is a minimum of 1 week in a predetermined hotel, quarantine hotel, for Israelis who are coming in from red countries. We do have evidence that Omicron has been spreading more and more in Israel. Currently, the number of people who have been diagnosed as being infected with Omicron has risen to 67. So we're still being able to count it in sort of tens and in dozens. I'm expecting that the numbers will probably expand exponentially in the near future, where we're going to see that number much, much more. But the attempt to try to stop that expansion means that the UK and Denmark have been added to the red list. And of course, the current prohibition on international travel, on people coming here, on mask wearing, the requirements of mask wearing, the requirements to have PCR tests done on a fairly regular basis for certain people, all of that has been extended. And the government feels that they are able somehow to stem the spread of Omicron. I'm not sure that this is ultimately going to be successful, but I think that it's admirable to have a go at trying to stop it to the extent that is possible. But we do see quite a number of Israelis traveling abroad and returning back. And even if they do go through the required process, which means having a PCR test before you get on the plane, having a PCR test when you land at Ben Gurion Airport, and then 3 days later, having spent 3 days in quarantine following landing in Israel, and that's for Israelis coming from any corner of the world, 3 days in quarantine, and then on the third day, getting a PCR test. And only if your PCR test at that stage is negative are you allowed to come out of quarantine. There are reports that Omicron potentially could take a little bit longer and that you could have those three tests be negative and still somehow come up with Omicron. I'm not sure exactly what that means, and I think we're all still learning about this new variant and what it means for us. But at least for now, the restrictions that have been in place have been extended, and they also have been expanded to include the UK and Denmark on the red country list.
Anthony, and in closing, I believe several people were killed in an explosion in the southern region of the Lebanon. Was this an attack? Was this an accident? What was this explosion?
Yeah, so lots and lots of controversy around this particular story. This happened next to a refugee camp in the southern Lebanese port city of Tyre. And the reports coming out there are very contradictory. There was certainly some sort of an explosion which rocked a refugee camp. It's one of 12 refugee camps that exist today in the Lebanon. These are camps of people who ran away from Israel at the time of the War of Independence, and their descendants, because that refugee situation has been allowed to perpetuate for more than 70 years. And it's just crazy how that situation has been allowed to perpetuate. But be it as it may, there was an explosion that took place within this refugee camp, by the sounds of things, which has been attributed to a location which is right next to the refugee camp. It's the Burj al-Shamali refugee camp next to Tyre. And what we are being told by some press reports is that this explosion took place at a suspected Hamas weapons depot in Lebanon. Now, we know that Hamas is very much associated with ruling the Gaza Strip and with activities within Gaza. And there are, I think it would come as a surprise to many people to hear that they have a weapons depot in Lebanon, which we more associate with Hezbollah rather than Hamas. But the story seems to be quite credible when reported in various different press articles, that this was a suspected Hamas weapons depot, which was right either on the outskirts or within the Burj al-Shamali refugee camp, and which resulted in this explosion within the refugee camp. And by some press accounts, is reported to have killed people. There are other press reports which have said nobody was killed, but we certainly don't know how many people were killed, an unspecified number of people have been reported to have been killed. Other reports, in an attempt to try to cover things up, have said this explosion was caused by an electrical fault in a warehouse which contained oxygen and gas cylinders for coronavirus patients, as well as detergents and disinfectants. So that's the cover-up story that seems to be spread around at the moment about this particular explosion. But what's even more sinister and a related story to the explosion is the fact that a number of people were actually killed at a funeral that was held to bury victims of this explosion. And the people who were killed as a result of an outbreak of fighting between supporters of Hamas and between supporters of Fatah, the two rival Palestinian groups, which seems to be just the strangest thing, that first of all, you can have this explosion in a refugee camp. If that's not bad enough, then some people who go are buried, after many reports have denied that anybody was even killed, then there is a funeral that's held, and at the funeral there's an outbreak of firing of weapons, and we understand from the funeral that at least four people were killed and another four others were wounded, some reportedly critically. And amongst those that were reported to have been killed at the funeral was a senior member of Hamas's political bureau, Zahir Jabarin. Apparently he was either, I don't know if he was wounded or he was killed, but certainly seems to have been involved in that particular outbreak of violence at the funeral. So very, very sad indeed that this particular situation has taken place. Not only that the refugee camp exists today after so many years, that this explosion has taken place at the refugee camp as a result of Hamas seeing fit to store its weapons some sort of a storage facility right near that refugee camp. And then these people being killed at the funeral of one of those who was killed. It's just very, very strange indeed, and a very unfortunate situation, and shows to what extent the antagonism runs deep in that relationship between Hamas and Fatah.
And very hectic. Anthony Reich, thank you so much for the Israel report. We'll be back same time, same place tomorrow. I look forward to continuing the conversation.